Good evening. For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry. The U.S. and key Asian countries are trying to put more pressure on North Korea as world leaders open a nuclear security summit in Washington. Nuclear terrorism and the Islamic State group topped this year's agenda at the summit. Ben Rose is Deputy National Security Advisor for Strategic Communications.
It's critically important that we're working to disrupt plots, given ISIL's efforts to move to more external plotting in Europe and other parts of the world. I think a focal point of the discussion tomorrow is going to be on what are we doing around intelligence and information sharing, how can we make sure that that's happening as fast as possible, how can we make sure that we are aligning our respective protocols so that we're able to better monitor foreign fighters who may be leaving Iraq and Syria and trying to come not just to Europe but to other countries. This is really one of the principal purposes of having a counter-ISIL discussion here tomorrow, not just to review the offensive campaign against ISIL, but also to review how we can better disrupt plots through collaboration.
In Syria, activists say at least 23 people have been killed in airstrikes that hit near a school and a hospital east of the Syrian capital, Damascus. It's one of the deadliest incidents since a ceasefire took effect more than a month ago. It's not clear who was behind the airstrikes. Syria's government says Al-Qaeda's branch there operates in the eastern suburbs of Damascus. Close to home today, federal judge Shira Shinlin approved a settlement to overhaul solitary confinement in New York State. The agreement is between the New York Civil Liberties Union and New York State. It provides a framework for ending the state's over-reliance on extreme isolation. It will result in the end of traditional solitary confinement for more than 1,100 people, one quarter of the current solitary population. They will either be placed in alternative units or provided with less isolating, more rehabilitative conditions. The settlement will further eliminate solitary confinement as punishment for minor violations. It will limit the duration of most solitary sentences and abolish several of solitary's most dehumanizing features. Today is International Transgender Day of Visibility. It's a day to encourage those in the transgender community who haven't made themselves public to step forward. And it's also a day to fight back against the North Carolina governor. More than 100 corporate executives added their names to a letter delivered to him calling for the repeal of the nation's first state law limiting bathroom options for transgender people. The law was signed by Republican Governor Pat McCrory. It also prohibits local anti-discrimination measures, prevents workers from suing in state court alleging discrimination on the basis of race, sex, and other factors, and it prevents cities and counties from requiring businesses to provide minimum wages or paid sick leave. Human Rights Campaign and Equality North Carolina announced a growing list of corporate leaders after delivering the letter and meeting privately with McCrory. The list includes major hotels, car companies, airlines, banking and finance executives, as well as restaurateurs and retailers. Business leaders say the new law will make it far more challenging for businesses across the state to recruit and retain the nation's best and brightest workers and attract the most talented students from across the nation. It will also diminish the state's draw as a destination for tourism, new businesses, and economic activity. Many governors, including the governors of New York, Connecticut, and Washington, have banned travel to North Carolina for state business until this law is overturned. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has approved labeling changes that will expand access to an effective medication that induces abortion. Andrea Sears reports.
Mifepristone has been around for about 40 years, but the protocols for prescribing it already were out of date when they were last changed 16 years ago. Elizabeth Nash with the Guttmacher Institute says the new labeling is an affirmation that the protocols many doctors have been using are based on evidence and science.
They allow the use of medication abortion up through 70 days of pregnancy, and they use a lower dosage of the medicine, which reduces the costs and reduces side effects.
While the new labeling will not have much impact in states such as New York, where abortion services are accessible, some states have used the outdated protocols to restrict access to the drug. According to Nash, in 2011, about 25% of all abortions were done with medication, and in some areas, twice that amount. but states such as Texas, Ohio, and North Dakota have used adherence to the old protocols to limit access to mifepristone.
And so when we see decreases because of these laws, you expect when access is eased to see an increase in the use of the method.
Another advantage of medication-based abortion is that it is available from anyone authorized to write the prescriptions.
This could also expand to not just physicians, but to other providers like physician assistants who could also potentially provide this method.
With some states continuing to impose new restrictions on surgical abortions, Nash says easing access to mifepristone could help women in those areas. For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
Meanwhile, after outrageous comments on abortion by Donald Trump, other presidential candidates are criticizing the GOP frontrunner. This for saying if abortion becomes illegal, women who get one should face some sort of punishment. Trump later reversed himself, but the backlash was immediate. Republican rival Ted Cruz says once again Trump has demonstrated that he hasn't seriously thought through the issues. Democrat Hillary Clinton tweeted, "We can't let someone with this much contempt for women's rights anywhere near the White House." A protest was held this afternoon in Columbus Circle where women spoke out against the Republican frontrunner's misogynistic views, and nationally feminists expressed outrage. Cecile Richards is with Planned Parenthood Action Fund.
Under no circumstances should we take Donald Trump's comments yesterday lightly or dismiss them based on his many efforts to walk them back. These are coming from a man who both wants to be president of the United States of America this year and is dangerously close. I think the important part of this story is that while Trump may be the bluntest, his positions and what he's saying is not that different from every other Republican candidate who have also pledged to make most abortions a crime. So let's be clear, Donald Trump may say it, but Ted Cruz has voted for these positions and John Kasich has as well in the state of Ohio. If you make an abortion a crime, you make women and doctors criminals, plain and simple. In Donald Trump's world, that means that the 1 in 3 women in the United States who have an abortion would be criminals under the eyes of the law. I think this just has been a stark reminder of what it really means when politicians vote to restrict access to abortion. Laws have consequences, and in this case, the consequence is criminalizing medical decisions made by a woman and her doctor. Let's be clear. Women are already being punished for seeking abortions because of the hundreds of restrictions that have been passed by legislatures across the country, including mandatory waiting periods, forced ultrasounds, biased counseling, laws that closed clinics. This is the ultimate end to this campaign of banning abortion. The hoops that women now have to jump through in order to access a legal service in this country, a legal abortion, makes it impossible for some and very, very difficult for too many. Women can lose their jobs. They are now forced to drive hundreds of miles. And as we're seeing in some places, they are beginning to take matters into their own hands because of the drastic restrictions being passed all across the country.
Richard says opponents to abortion have created an incredibly hostile environment for nurses, doctors, and staff centers, and for women who access care. They shame and punish women every day, many outside of Planned Parenthood health centers. Planned Parenthood has endorsed Hillary Clinton for president, as has Emily's List. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. Hillary Clinton is trying to reconnect with New Yorkers in advance of the New York primary. She held a rally at the Apollo Theater in Harlem on Wednesday.
But I don't have to tell you, this is a wild election year. I'm not taking anything or anyone for granted. We're going to work for every vote and every part of this state, just like I did.
Clinton spoke about her 8 years as New York senator. She invoked 9/11 many times.
There were some hard times, weren't there?
Yes.
But we pulled together. None of us who lived through 9/11 and its aftermath will ever forget the lives lost, lower Manhattan in ruins, toxic dust and debris raining down, and the many examples of heroism we saw. the firefighters and police
officers. Clinton told a story about an immigrant who ran towards the rubble on that day and was originally mistaken for one of those involved in the attack. But the question remains as to whether there's a problem with politicians invoking 9/11 in their political speech, especially with Clinton, according to progressives whose foreign policy contributed to backlash against American hegemony. Meanwhile, the Amsterdam News endorsed Clinton for president. They wrote, "Our nation sits on the precipice. We have two formidable candidates running for the Democratic nomination." While Senator Bernie Sanders believes that he is a revolutionary who will change the face of politics and claims to have been part of the good fight for decades, we ask at the Amsterdam News if he has been part of the struggle. Did we just miss all those protests in Vermont about voter suppression and civil rights? Herb Boyd with the Amsterdam News says the paper is just more familiar with Clinton.
I mean, she was our state senator here in New York, and of course the Secretary of State and was First Lady. And we had this relationship, I think, over the years. And I think that's part of the justification is familiarity. Very familiar with her. And she's not an unknown item, not to us or anyone else for that matter.
Boyd said Bernie Sanders had the opportunity to reach out to the Amsterdam News, but just hasn't.
I think this is a situation where usually we'd say Bernie or Hillary would be okay. Now, that would be probably the case if Bernie's campaign team had reached out to us. We'd have had to say something along those lines, but he hasn't said anything directly to us. We generally know his policy. The policy is very progressive and one that certainly as an individual that I certainly endorse. You know, mm-hmm. I recognize what he's all about. You know, I tend to take a leftist position when it comes to political issues.
Right.
And I know exactly where he's coming from, but I'm not the paper.
We reached out to the Sanders campaign about visiting the Amsterdam News. We haven't received a response yet. At the Harlem rally, taking digs at her opponent, Senator Sanders, Clinton said Sanders' plans would never be realized because Congress would oppose them or because the numbers don't add up. Meanwhile, Bernie Sanders, who had been campaigning in Wisconsin and seems to be ahead in the polls over there, was campaigning today in Pennsylvania and this evening in New York. He is talking about getting big money out of politics, his plan to make public colleges and universities tuition-free, combating climate change and ensuring universal health care. This evening, he'll hold a rally in the South Bronx with special guest actress Rosario Dawson and rapper Residente. Here in New York, getting big money out of politics was what protesters were asking for.
Hillary!
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 Take the pledge!
Take the pledge!
Greenpeace activists called out Hillary Clinton at an Upper West Side fundraiser Wednesday evening.
We think that she shouldn't take money from the fossil fuel industry, take donations from the fossil fuel industry.
Nick Duffy from Manhattan stands with other activists who hold red, white, and blue signs which read, "Democracy is not for sale."
The main issue that we're discussing here is campaign finances based on money from those groups that have vested interests in maintaining those industries, which we think are unsustainable.
Ken Burke is the campaign coordinator for Greenpeace USA NYC. He's holding a banner in the wind.
This was made by one of the people that we're out here with.
And it says, Hillary?
Hillary, will you come out and talk to the people you are fighting for, which is basically her campaign slogan that she's fighting for people of color, for minorities, for women. The 99% basically, and we feel that she's here today at one of the richest addresses in America, the Dakota, and we wanted to come outside. We're part of a coalition of 200 different organizations, environmental groups like our own, social justice groups, workers unions, 200 organizations nationwide banding together, and our request of her today would be for her to take a pledge that she's not going to take fossil fuel money in her campaign anymore, moving forward.
Do you have any idea of the extent of this?
How much she has taken already?
Yeah.
Well, she's been quoted as saying that she's only taken $150,000 from the fossil fuel industry, but the truth of the matter is that you can't really tell because some of these organizations, these corporations, give in the form of super PACs where you do not have to disclose the amount or who it's going to. So I can't honestly tell you how much money she's taken.
An analysis by the Huffington Post found that nearly all lobbyists bundling contributions for Clinton's campaign have at one time or another worked for the fossil fuel industry. Among them, current or former lobbyists for Chevron and TransCanada, which wanted to build the Keystone XL pipeline. And even though it's not directly affiliated with the campaign, millions of dollars have been donated to the Clinton Foundation from oil companies. As well, according to factcheck.org, Clinton owns shares of a mutual fund that invests in oil and gas companies.
What really irks me, and I think irks the left, especially all the activists in New York, is that she's running on this populist campaign when she's really not a true populist.
Political performance artist Marnie Halassa.
The fact of the matter is, as all of us know, we all know, we follow her, so we study her, so we know that she's not a populist. So for her to say that, like, I just can't help myself. I mean, I get a lot of flack from my friends and family that are like, why are you protesting against Hillary? Protest against Trump? Which, of course, I do. But at the same time, I can't help myself. I have to go out because if she's that disingenuous, I feel like it's my duty as a citizen of the United States to express that so the public really knows what's going on.
Do you guys think that protesting is really, like, the best way to fix it? Isn't it better to be out there campaigning for Bernie instead of yelling in the streets that Hillary doesn't care about people and that she's being bought by the companies?
Leo is a young student at Hunter.
I think Bernie's great, and I think Hillary is too, because, I mean, I think she gets a bad rap. Like, as Secretary of State, my mom worked for her, and she made some mistakes, sure, but she did a lot of good things. She definitely kept America safe. And as senator, she advocated for a lot of things that I agree with, whether it was climate change, whether it was foreign policy, or whether it was getting more jobs and helping the recession.
But you say that you're for Bernie.
Yeah, I am.
Why is that?
Well, I think that Bernie Sanders cares a lot about people, and I feel like he's really the person that can take our country into a new century. He understands what people care about. I think Hillary is a really good candidate too, but I'm for Bernie because of how much I think that he really understands and cares about the American voters.
Jill Paith with Greenpeace says what's important is to get big money out of politics and to protect and preserve democracy.
We need the voices of the people to be much louder compared to the big corporations who right now have louder voices than we do because they can afford to spend lots of money on elections.
What would you like to see different in the Clinton campaign?
I think if Clinton wants to reach younger voters and millennials, I think what she needs to do is refuse to accept future contributions from fossil fuel interests. I think that way she'll help earn our trust because we'll know that she won't be under the influence of the fossil fuel industry like natural gas and coal and oil.
Democratic candidate Bernie Sanders, who is in Manhattan today, doesn't accept any fossil fuel money. The Republican candidates have not responded yet to the request to sign the pledge, but some congressional candidates have signed on. You can learn more by going to greenpeace.org and search the hashtag #FixDemocracy online. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.
Take the pledge!
Take the pledge!
Take the pledge!
Take the pledge!
That's all I got.